Thank you for standing by, and welcome to the United Malt Group 1H23 results call. All participants are in a listen-only mode. There will be a presentation followed by a question-and-answer session. If you wish to ask a question, you will need to press the star key followed by the number one on your telephone keypad. I would now like to hand the conference over to Mr. Mark Palmquist, MD and CEO. Please go ahead.
Thanks, Harmony. Good morning, everyone. Welcome to United Malt's first half 2023 results conference call. I'm Mark Palmquist, CEO of United Malt, and I'm joined on the call today by Ryan Dutcher, our interim CFO. For today's call, I will start, as we always do, with a quick comment on safety performance. That will be followed up by a quick update on the announcement we made in late March regarding the process deed with Maltier Soufflet. I will then provide an overview of the half-year result. Ryan will discuss the financial performance in more detail, including P&L, CapEx, and balance sheet. I will conclude with an update on our strategic progress and an outlook for FY23. As usual, we are happy to take your questions at the end. So let me start with safety. While the recordable injury frequency rate was steady on the prior period, unfortunately, we had an increase in the lost time injury frequency rate. The majority of safety incidents happened in our Canadian business, and mostly from a situation where an employee has deviated from our standard processes. Our focus is on improving employee situational awareness when working. We are confident this will prove to be effective and be reflected in improved performance in future months. Now I'd like to go through an overview of the half-year period. As you will recall, we released a trading update on 27 April on our first half 23 results are consistent with that update. Our full-year guidance for FY23 also remains consistent with that announcement. Before commenting on the result, I would draw your attention to the restatement of the prior period first half 22 results. During the half year, we restated the first half 22 accounts for a change in accounting treatment in relation to our wheat trading activities. This was applied retrospectively following review of our group derivative position. As a result, the comparative numbers for first half 22 shown throughout this presentation reflect the restated first half 22 position. At a group level, underlying EBITDA before SaaS costs and one-off items was $52.7 million. While that's slightly higher than the restated position for the prior corresponding half, it's lower than anticipated as we detailed in the trading update provided on 27 April. Primarily, that's due to lower volumes in the first quarter and the delayed commissioning of our Inverness facility. The trading update detailed the one-off costs we experienced during the period, which are excluded from underlying EBITDA. These include closing out of ineffective currency hedges, restructuring costs, and higher SaaS costs. Notwithstanding a lower than anticipated result for the half, we remain confident of a significantly improved performance in the second half. Our barley quality, price, and supply are secured for the remainder of the year, and the improved pricing and commercial terms locked in for 2023 from our new contracts are expected to continue to generate increased margin and earnings. As a result, we have maintained guidance for FY23 underlying EBITDA, which we continue to expect to be $140 to $160 million before SaaS and one-off costs. In terms of the balance sheet, you will recall we secured banking covenant amendments from our banks in respect of 31 March 2023. So while the gearing ratio at 31 March temporarily exceeds our target, we have a clear pathway back towards our target range. That is being driven by a material improvement in earnings from the second half, a significant step down in CapEx commitments in FY23, the factoring arrangement we have put in place of approximately $90 million, which gives us further short-term financing flexibility, and continued cost and capital initiatives underway across the business. And as we have said previously, on that basis, we believe there's no requirement to raise additional capital. Now, turning to slide six, you will recall our announcement on 28th of March that United Malt has entered into a process and exclusivity deed with Maltier Soufflet. That follows Maltier Soufflet submitting a conditional, non-binding, and indicative proposal to acquire all of the ordinary shares in United Malt for $5 per share in cash. Obviously, I'm limited in what I can say in regard to this announcement. But what I can say is that under the terms of the process deed, Maltier Soufflé has the opportunity to conduct due diligence on an exclusive basis and to work cooperatively with United Malt towards entry into a scheme implementation agreement. Maltier Soufflé and its commercial, financial, and legal advisors are undertaking a detailed due diligence program. We are facilitating this by providing access to an extensive virtual data room, management Q&A, briefings and presentations, and global site inspections of our facilities in the UK, North America, and Australia. United Malt shareholders do not need to take any action in relation to this proposal, and we will continue to keep the market informed as appropriate. Now, I will hand over to Ryan to discuss the financials in more detail.
Thank you, Mark, and good morning to everyone. On slide 8, I will start with the summary P&L for the half-year period. I'll also reiterate Mark's comments about the restatement of accounts relating to the prior corresponding period. That restatement is detailed in the notes to our financial statements. Group revenue increased by 16%, which primarily reflected improved commercial terms and higher barley prices during the period. As Mark said, underlying EBITDA, before SaaS costs and one-off items, was $52.7 million. While that was lower than anticipated, we did see an improvement in Q2 from an uplift in gross margin, reflecting improved commercial terms. One-off costs not included in underlying EBITDA included $5.6 million from closing out of ineffective currency hedges and from movements in exchange rates during the period, and $2 million in one-off restructuring costs related to the amalgamation of our North American processing and warehouse and distribution sales teams. SaaS costs for the period were $6.8 million. This was higher than previously anticipated due to the increased use of external resources for both the ERP and TMS implementation. So EBITDA, including SaaS and one-off items, was $38.3 million. Net finance costs increased from $5.3 million to $16.4 million. This is in line with expectations due to higher interest costs, the short-term impact of higher barley inventory costs, and the cost of barley we required for commissioning our Inverness facility in Scotland. We incurred significant items of $3 million related to expenses associated with the response to the indicative proposal from Malt Soufflé. So on a reported basis, the group reported a statutory net loss after tax of $13.8 million. This compares to a net profit after tax of $6 million for the prior corresponding period. On slide 9, I'll move on to the processing segment. Revenue in this segment was up 23%. To $612.7 million. This mainly reflects the pass-through of significantly higher barley prices, but also improved commercial terms progressively taking effect. While underlying EBITDA, before SaaS and one-off items, increased by 7%, that was lower than anticipated. Earnings were impacted by lower than expected volumes in Q1 and the two-month delay in commissioning of the Inverness facility, which reduced our anticipated sales volume by about 15,000 tons. Sales volumes were 3% above the prior corresponding period. However, volumes in Q1 were 6 to 8% lower than anticipated. This reflects lower beer demand, which is consistent with the sales results of our brewers. Volume began recovering towards the end of Q2, which reflected the seasonal increase in malt demand as customers begin to build inventory for summer in the Northern Hemisphere. Earnings increased in the second quarter from improved commercial terms, which resulted in a significant uplift in Q2 versus Q1. I will discuss this on a subsequent slide. So EBITDA, including one-off items and SaaS costs, was $25.8 million for this segment, which was 18% down on the prior corresponding period. On slide 10, I'll move on to the warehouse and distribution segment. In this segment, revenue declined by 4%. This reflects volume declines, and underlying EBITDA before SaaS costs and one-off items was down 10%. This again reflects lower volumes experienced during the period. However, underlying EBITDA margin on a constant currency basis was in line with the prior corresponding half. So when we include SaaS costs and one-off items, EBITDA for this segment was $16.6 million, which is 13.5% down on the prior corresponding half. On slide 11, I'll talk about the important uplift in gross margins achieved in the second quarter. This slide demonstrates the significant improvement in gross margins we achieved in Q2, which is related to the progressive implementation of improved commercial terms with our customers. As you can see on the first bar, volumes recovered slightly in Q2, particularly towards the end of the quarter. However, on the second bar, you can see the significant uplift in gross margin in the second quarter. This was the key driver of earnings improvement. Gross margin in Q2 was 1.7 times higher than it was in Q1. We expect this margin improvement will continue for the remainder of the year. On slide 12, I'll shift to capital expenditures. For the first half, our capital expenditures were $39.9 million. This is down 15% on the prior corresponding half. Of that 39.9, $26.9 million was growth capex. This includes the completion of the expansion of our Scottish facilities in service to the distilling market. So in total, this project has added 79,000 tons of capacity at both our Arboris and Mears facilities, and we continue to expect to generate incremental EBITDA of approximately $18 million on a full-year run rate basis from this project. The new Inverness facility has been producing high-quality malt since commissioning in March and is running at full capacity. Other growth projects include our specialty ingredient processing plant in Calgary, which is now complete and also in full production. As we've said previously, for the next few years, we expect a material reduction in CapEx, with base CapEx in the range of $55 to $60 million and stay in business and safety-related investments in the range of $30 to $35 million. On slide 13, I'll turn to the balance sheet. First, I'll note that inventories increased due to the additional barley intake for the expansion in Inverness and also from higher global barley and malt prices. Trade payables were lower and consistent with the seasonal unwind. Mark already mentioned the temporary increase in gearing and the amended banking covenants with respect to the 31st of March of 2023. And also, as Mark indicated, we maintain a clear path back towards our target gearing range. On slide 14, we'll cover operating cash flow. We had an increase in working capital, once again due to higher barley costs and malt prices, and also related to the buildup of inventory for commissioning at Inverness. This first half also includes the typical season buildup that we see in preparation for second half shipments. Also, the proceeds from the factoring facility accelerated cash receipts as expected of accounts receivable balances. Interest paid was higher and in line with our expectations. This is due to higher interest rates and elevated levels of both barley and malt inventories across the group. On slide 15, you'll see a summary and details of our bank facilities. Our term debt remains broadly unchanged. We experienced an increase in short-term financing requirements. This primarily relates again to higher barley prices and the additional intake of barley, also at higher prices, in the lead up to our expansion and operation at Inverness. As we mentioned earlier, we entered into the factoring arrangement for our receivables with a capacity of $90 million and provides us additional short-term financial flexibility. Also, we have commenced the refinancing process in relation to our short-term facilities, which mature in November 23, and also of our long-term facilities, which mature in November of 2024. That concludes the slides on financials. I'll now hand it back over to Mark for an interview or for an overview of our strategy and our market outlook.
Great. Thanks, Ryan. I'll spend the next couple of slides on an update on strategic process, but first I want to go through an update on our commercial terms on slide 17. As you know, we've been working hard over the past few months to take a more proactive approach to managing risk. We have been progressively enhancing contracts with customers, which includes changed pricing and commercial terms. This involves pricing malt with our customers with more certainty on crop quality and price, and taking a more disciplined approach to managing our customers' volume commitments. Our commercial terms now also include more frequent freight price resets and inflation cost escalation more appropriately reflected in the processing fee. The key outcome is that the barley price and crop risk is being substantially reflected in our pricing on our customer orders in 2023. We have seen that reflected in the significantly improved gross margin in the second quarter compared to the first quarter, as we've detailed earlier in the presentation. We expect that will continue in the second half. which together with the certainty we have over crop quality, provides us with confidence for improved earnings in the second half. On to slide 18, let me run through the key drivers of earnings improvement in FY23. Now, as I just mentioned, we expect a material uplift in earnings from security of the barley crop quality and the progressive implementation of improved commercial terms. Second, we continue to expect increment earnings of $18 million EBITDA on a full-year run rate basis from the Scottish expansion. Third, we have completed the new specialty ingredients processing plant at Calgary. We are producing unmalted cereals and grains, which enhances the diversity of our portfolio of warehouse and distribution products. More recently, we have partnered with Bevport Distribution to launch a beer distribution service. This will provide breweries with a new way to deliver their beer to retailers using our unique warehouse and distribution network. We're launching the first pilot of the new service in Florida this August. Finally, we continue to implement our business transformation program. We have combined our sales and marketing teams across processing and warehouse distribution in North America and have implemented a new ERP across our warehouse and distribution segment. We have completed the implementation of the ERP in the processing business in the U.S., and we'll progress the remainder of the geographies over the coming months. We remain committed to delivering approximately $30 million in annualized net benefits by FY24. Next slide, let me make some comments about current market conditions. We have seen some softness in beer demand in the first half, and that is consistent with the reports of the major brewers, which you may have already seen. However, considering the ongoing inflationary environment, the end consumer is remaining fairly resilient, but we do continue to monitor this carefully. As we have already seen towards the end of the second quarter, we're anticipating a traditional uptick in seasonal volumes with the Northern Hemisphere summer approaching, a key time for beer demand. Distilling demand remains strong, and as we have said previously, over 95% of our UK capacity has been committed for FY23. More broadly, we've seen a general easing in supply chain constraints together with the reduction in freight rates. Energy costs have also moderated somewhat. So all up, supply side factors have improved and we continue to monitor end consumer demand. Let me conclude with some comments about our outlook for this financial year, FY23. As I said earlier, we expect a material improvement in earnings in the second half. As a result, we have maintained earning guidance for FY23 with underlying EBITDA before SaaS costs and one-off items expected to be in the range of $140 to $160 million. That guidance assumes no further material deterioration in market conditions and also assumes continued gross margin improvements in the second half of 23 will offset any unanticipated reductions in volumes. Beyond FY23, we also expect continued earnings improvement. That is being driven by incremental earnings from the Scottish distilling expansion, new revenue streams and margin-enhanced product lines we are launching in warehouse and distribution, and the progressive delivery of the transformation program benefits. And finally, we maintain a clear pathway back towards our target gearing range. That concludes today's presentation. Ryan and I will be happy to take your questions at this point.
Thank you. If you wish to ask a question, please press star 1 on your telephone and wait for your name to be announced. If you wish to cancel your request, please press star 2. If you're on a speakerphone, please pick up the handset to ask your question. Your first question comes from David Pobucky from Macquarie Group. Please go ahead.
Good morning, Mark, Ryan and Renee. Thank you for taking my questions. Just the first one on FY23 guidance. As you see it now, what do you think are the key risks for the business for the remainder of the year? What would drive the lower and upper ends there, please?
Yeah, good morning, David. Appreciate the question. I think it's the same as it has been since we started the fiscal year, and that's really about the demand for beer and the resulting consumption that goes forward. We've seen volumes being lower than what we would have anticipated. We've offset a lot of that with the improvement that we see in the margins. And then we look for that the reduction in volumes we saw in the first half actually to start to narrow and pick up with the primary production for us is in the Northern Hemisphere. So hitting the summer months would be pretty important to us. as well as we're still seeing very good demand on the distilling side of the business with a lot of expansion that's gone on in distilling capacity in Scotland, but also the boutique distilling business that's showing great growth in North America as well as Australia. So that would be the key risk, and that's the one that we are watching closely, and that will certainly have an impact on our results for the last half, 23, either negatively or positively.
Thank you, Mark. Appreciate that. And just the second question, in terms of the balance sheet, gearing at 9.8 times in the first half, you received a covenant amendment there, as you previously flagged, and you note that you maintain a pathway towards your target gearing range of 2 to 2.5 times. But previously you noted by the end of FY23, but you haven't provided that wording in today's update. So would you mind just providing a comment on that? Do you think you can still get back there by FY23?
Yeah, so and I appreciate that comment. It's something we're watching very, very closely. So what we're seeing is the same dynamic and the same timing of inventory needs for debt as we have seen. So we still expect that even from the increased levels of inventory now with the Inverness buildup and then the higher malt and barley costs, we still expect to work our way back towards that range by the end of the year. So that's really unchanged in terms of what the shape of the curve will look like and where we'll end up.
Thank you, Ryan. Appreciate it.
Thank you. Your next question comes from Apoorv Sehgal from UBS. Please go ahead.
Good morning, guys. Thanks for taking my question. Maybe firstly, just from a volumes point of view, sounds like from what I was reading, you're saying sort of first quarter volumes were about 6 to 8% below, but first half ended up about 3% up. So sounds like Q2 was particularly strong. How would you compare volumes versus pre-COVID levels? Like, are we sort of broadly in line now? I mean, are we still lagging behind by a little bit? Any sort of comments on on-premise versus off-premise would be appreciated, Mark.
Yeah. Good morning, Apoorv. We are seeing volumes. They're tracking better, but they're still tracking behind. And what we're seeing coming out of the recent beer numbers through the first quarter is that they're down 3%. So certainly better than what we experienced in the first quarter. We saw increasing recovery through the second quarter. And again, that's starting to mimic how we're looking at the last half year. Is not sure that we'll fully recover to what we anticipate, but we've taken that under consideration in how we're looking at our forecast for last half 23, because our margins actually continued to run better than anticipated. And the contracts are all locked in, barley prices are all locked in, so we have good confidence in terms of where the margins are at. So if we sit here and track at being 3% lower than what we had assumed, we're still confident on the forecast we have for the full year.
Okay. And just on your FY23 earnings guidance, you've obviously reaffirmed the 140 to 160, but the first half was obviously a bit lower than the original guidance a few months ago. What's giving you confidence to reaffirm that range? Like, is there a particular element that's actually tracking better than maybe your expectations a few months ago? Is it the cost unwind of the freight costs and the energy costs and things like that that maybe just gone a bit better than maybe you expected a few months ago, that's seeing you actually reaffirm that range?
Yeah, it's really about the confirmation that the improvement in our contracts for calendar year 2023 and what we're anticipating for margins has fully come through, plus a little bit more than that. So that's where the confidence comes in. We're able to wear aspect of volumes maybe not reaching the anticipated levels that we had expected, but the margin is pretty much offsetting that as we see going forward. The other thing is that even despite the issues that we have experienced over the last couple of years, the seasonality of demand has held very consistent. So again, getting into the second half, we look for an uptick. We're not, again, anticipating that we'll get back to the anticipated levels But it's good to see that beer volumes now, not revenue, is tracking about 3% low than where we were last year, and we have that built into our forecast.
Okay, maybe just a final question for me, please. Just on the net debt position at 31st of March, I know you've explained the working capital build and you've talked about that in the past. Did it still come in kind of well above maybe what you were expecting a couple of months ago? Just looking at sort of my numbers, but also from what I can see in consensus, it was a much higher number. So I'm just wondering internally, did it maybe come in higher or consistent with what you would have expected for the half?
Yeah, so we knew that that's why we went out and got covenant amendments. So we did know that barley prices were increasing, and we were absolutely watching that closely. So it's something we definitely, that's why we put the factoring in place, which is to have that level of flexibility, which is just working as planned. So it's something we watch closely now with Inverness in plan. We'll start to see that work down.
Yeah, I just had a further comment. With obviously the volumes being down more than what we anticipated, actually meant that we had a higher carry of malt inventories, and so that would be probably the key component that's really made a difference for us in carrying a higher debt level than what we would have anticipated at the start of the fiscal year.
Okay, thanks for your time, guys. Appreciate it.
Thank you. Once again, if you wish to ask a question, please press star 1 on your telephone. Your next question comes from Mark Tapie from Select Equities. Please go ahead.
Hello. My question is just a follow-up on the lower volumes and the mix. We see the commentary from the craft sector that craft beer sales are flat. That's the craft beer industry saying that in the US. So first question just around the mix of product going forward and how that's impacting the warehouse and how perhaps we should think about that going forward given that trend.
Yeah, thanks for the question, Mark. And it's something that we're tracking. There's a number of factors that goes into the craft side for the moment. One is that we're seeing a number of craft operators operating on slightly reduced hours, and that has as much to do with labor shortage and also labor inflation. So we're just not getting the same amount of time in front of the customer that we have experienced in the past. So that's a trend that we're watching. In terms of the mix, also a little bit of change going on in what the beer products that are in a growth mode right now. There's a kind of a blast to the past here where you're seeing more lagers and pilsners as being the growth area. So it changes the mix for us on the specialty malts. That means a little bit less pale ale, but it does mean an increase in terms of pilsen type of malts. So the specialty malts mix is kind of changing in front of our eyes here, and we're trying to see what that means for us through the last half. Now, again, this is where we really see pick up in volumes for craft. When the weather is better, people get outside, there's a lot more consumption at destination that takes place, primarily North America is what I'm referring to. And so we are looking for pickup in those volumes as well. I'm aware of the Brewers Association numbers that they just recently put out, and they did show craft as being flat. But again, you got to remember the definition of a craft producer under Brewer Association numbers, and that actually holds out a lot of the craft produced beers that are owned by the bigger brewers. And that's where we're seeing actually a little bit of a decrease similar to what they're experiencing on their premium brands as well.
Right, okay. Thanks for that. And just a follow-up on the Scotch side of things, the continued growth in that distillers, how do you see the opportunity in that business? And maybe just remind us about the margin opportunity. There seems to be a limited amount of players, and obviously it is a very specialised market, but can you talk about the growth opportunity as scotch grows in countries like India and China, even that consumption?
Yeah, the what we see coming out of the Distilling Association is they look for continued growth, and we're seeing investments being made by the major players, particularly in Scotland. So there's a continued growing demand, particularly for the single malt aged whiskeys, which means that they need to lay product down for, you know, say, 10 to 12 years. And so we're seeing a very stable increase in demand coming out of that marketplace. The opening of travel also has been very beneficial, with the airport duty-free markets are a very important aspect for the worldwide consumption that goes on. So the whole distilling market, particularly on the premium type of products as a single malt Scotch whiskey, we look for continued growth. To your comment or kind of question of you know, how is the market trying to respond to that, the distilling capacity is going in Scotland, but other areas as well. So we're seeing good growth. We're also seeing the boutique distillers is growing, which is actually a very nice market for us in our warehouse and distribution. A lot of the products are similar. Distribution is similar as well. And so we're really feeling pretty good about that marketplace for us. It's also a little bit of diversification away from beer, where we've seen spirits having a pretty good growth as a general comment.
And that does imply the margins as sort of projected and are holding up pretty strongly?
Yeah, margins are performing well on the distilling side. Again, it's in the relationship when they're putting so much investment into putting a bottle of single malt on the shelf, that it's very important for them that they're getting a consistent, high-quality type of malt, which is a big part, obviously, of the production of the distilled spirit. And so we're seeing very, very, I'd say, strong demand to begin with, and the margins being maintained quite well, as there is a fair tightness between distilling capacity and malting capacity, particularly when you talk about Scotland, when it's a provenance issue, where you need to have the barley grown or sown, grown, malted, and distilled in Scotland. That's really what holds the premium on the single malts.
And then just lastly on the FX side, just looking through the accounts, but can you just step us through the ineffective hedge that you took you brought to account, and just what the hedging strategy, you know, what does it imply in terms of the hedging strategy going forward, and just step us through so I can perhaps understand that a bit better in terms of that charge particularly.
Sure. Yeah. So at the summary levels, we reviewed our currency derivative management across the group and made some process changes. And as a result of that review, we had a one-time event, and that related to closing out some of our overhedged positions. So that's, and per AASB 9, we crystallize that and flow that through the P&L immediately. So that explains the charge. Just the summaries, we hedge a number of currency transactions across the globe. So that's our main approach, and those are hedged according to the sales contract. So that's the general approach that we take, and you know, normal review of that is something we did in the first half.
Right. So is it fair to assume that we wouldn't see the same sort of quantum of taking a loss on a hedge going forward, or is that a fair assumption, or how should we think about it?
Yeah, that absolutely is. So in effect, we were overhedged, and we talked about some of the contract changes and volume changes. So we found ourselves overhedged relative to those contract positions, and that's why I point back to the process changes as well that you know, will eliminate that or keep that from happening in the future.
Right. And perhaps lastly, just post-COVID now, are those bottlenecks that perhaps in labour, or is there any other sort of bottlenecks you're seeing at the moment in terms of freight? Or, and I recall that domestically or in the US there was some issues around freight and train freight. Is there any sort of bottlenecks that you're seeing at the moment?
Yeah, just some general comments, Mark. So the truck transportation is improving. Part of that, I think, is just seeing economy in North America slowing down. So that's creating a little bit of capacity. Rail is also getting better, albeit we still have some minor disruptions. They're still not back to what we would call a very fluid type of exchange of equipment from empties to loaded. The only place that we're seeing disruptions is just we're still seeing on the container side that the vessels haven't gotten themselves fully back into a fluid situation. So container freight itself has dropped dramatically in terms of the cost. But certainty in getting rides on vessels is still periodically having some issues with it. But I don't want to overstate that. It pales in comparison to what we were experiencing just 18 months ago. So we have seen good improvement on that side.
Great. All right. Thank you for your time there.
Yeah, thanks, Mark.
Thank you. Your next question comes from James Ferrier from Wilsons. Please go ahead.
Good morning, Mark and Ryan. Thanks for your time. Can I firstly ask you to clarify your comments around the volumes in the first half of the processing segment? So in the presentation, it says 3% up year on year. And then I think there was two separate references you made in the Q&A. One was around volumes being 6 to 8% below expectations. And then a little bit later on, you referenced 3% below. Can you just clarify that, please?
Yeah, absolutely. Good morning, James. So general process chain that runs through is if there's a drop in volumes, we probably feel it first as a malt producer because we see our malt shipments start to drop down. And that's what we experienced, particularly in the first quarter, where we saw volumes, depending upon region and customers, and this is primarily a North American effect, that we're down 5 to 8%, depending upon who the customers were, particularly in that first quarter. In December in particular was down considerably under what we were anticipating. In the second quarter, we started seeing it picking up. And so by the time we got to the end of the first half, we're seeing volumes that were tracking roughly 3% down as a company. We never saw distilling fall down. This is really more of a brewer effect, and it's primarily in North America. Our Australian volumes held well, our UK volumes held well. So this is really all about the beer consumption and what we're seeing going on in the marketplace and the impact that it has on us. But again, with the seasonality, we have a natural pickup coming in. And improving volumes coming into the second half. And just to, you know, kind of make it clear here is that we're anticipating in our forward earnings for the second half that we're not going to get back to what we think is the anticipated demand. We're anticipating at this point that we'll probably continue at a down 3% from last year type of run rate.
Okay, so those figures you just quoted there, that the 5 to 8 and the 3, that's relative to your previous expectations. Because, of course, if you're down 5 to 8 in the first quarter and down 3 in the second quarter, you can't finish the first half up 3%.
That's exactly right, yeah.
Okay, that's good to know. Thank you. Second question, in the warehouse and distribution segment, so constant currency EBITDA was stronger than actual. That surprised us a little bit, just given the Aussie dollar weakened and the translation benefit we figured would have come there. And can you just explain why actual FX EBITDA was lower than constant currency?
Yeah. So overall, so sales were down in this segment. So that's the main element that that really drives that performance even before constant currency perspective.
Yeah, okay, that makes sense. The $63 million drawdown in receivables factoring, is that included in the drawn debt on balance sheet, or does that sit off balance sheet?
That's correct. It sits off balance sheet, so it's included in the cash, but not included in the debt.
Yeah. Okay. Great. And then just lastly, under you've talked a lot about the new customer contract structures that you've been able to implement, and the margin outcome early on has been better than you'd hoped, which is great to hear. What impact do you expect under those new contract structures when some of the spot price deflation that we're seeing across barley, freight, energy, et cetera, what impact do you expect when that cost deflation starts to roll through the contract structures, just in terms of gross margin?
Yep. So we don't think it has an impact on gross margin. It'll have an impact on what is the malt price. And again, we pass through, if we see decreases in barley, if we have increases in some of our production costs, that doesn't have an impact in terms of what our gross margin is. In some respects, we're hopeful that we do get some relief from the cost structure because it just prices the malt more competitively in the marketplace, and hopefully that will help return to beer consumption.
Yeah, okay. But when you talk about gross margins, are you talking percentage of sales or gross margin dollars per ton?
We look at it as a per ton base. So when we look at it on a per ton, then the cost that goes into the production, barley being the biggest, labor and energy being the next two, that those are kind of pass through costs, James. So again, we're not looking at the top line revenue. We're actually, when we talk about gross margin, we look at the cost to produce basis, the sales value that we're able to procure.
Yep, that makes more sense. Thanks for your time.
Thank you. Your next question comes from Jonathan Snape from Bell Potter. Please go ahead.
Yeah, thanks. And look, just two questions if I can. One, can I just circle back to the comments on the gearing targets? Obviously, I think it was pointed out before, the language kind of changed a bit, but can you just correct me if I'm wrong here? I mean, your guidance would imply somewhere about $100 million in EBITDA in the second half at the midpoint. You got $3 million off that in SaaS costs that you're going to, probably spend. You got $20 million in CapEx if I'm looking at the guidance statement, $20 million in leases that go out, $95 million in working capital releases if I'm looking at the appendix notes, right, which is somewhere about the, an inflow of 110 or 155 thereabouts coming in. And then maybe you have another 30 you can pull against this financing facility off balance sheet ones, which maybe is 140 to 185. I mean, that gets you to a number well north of 2 to 2.5 times. Am I missing something in the cash flow bridges over the second half?
So the only, in terms of cash flow, would be the ability to factor. So the factoring, we've talked about our total the total capacity amount of the factoring.
Yeah.
We can actually get more. We can generate more cash flow on that, depending on, could we turn over our invoices on a regular basis. So you'll see in our financial results, you'll see the amount just over $60 million. That is more than we've actually factored, just because we get to turn over those invoices on a regular basis. So that's the first side. The second element is that we do we have seen those higher margins, so that will that serves both purposes. It gives us better EBITDA, but it also gives us better operating cash flow. So we've already seen that come through in the first half, and we expect to see that in the second half as well. And then the last piece would be as we manage our CapEx as well. So that's the other one, as we think about stay in business and safety related CapEx. We're certainly not going to make decisions that would jeopardize the safety, but we do have some level of flexibility in the short term relative to how we spend that the CapEx on a maintenance level. And then the last one I will bring up is our ability to manage working capital. So mainly this be AR, AP, inventory levels, and that as another lever to be able to manage. And that's largely a function of watching volumes really closely and being able to respond with working capital adjustments. So those are the levers we'll pull to get to get to that level, get to that range.
Yeah, well, I think you called out it's like a $50, $95 million deleverage already from working capital. I kind of put in there. Is there more than that, you reckon, that could come through?
Yeah, so that would be a, you know, it'll be a function. We'll watch this closely. It'll be a function of volumes in the second half. So that's really what we'll watch closely in terms of how we process, how much barley we bring in and how much we process into malt, i.e. adding more expense. And that's just going to be something we're going to watch closely. And that's also balancing across our sites as well.
Okay. And can I just ask, you know, if I looked last year, I think one of the things you noted in your business is I think the domestic malt volumes in the US had kind of got back to historical levels, but export volumes were pretty awful still. Now, understandably, there was nothing to export. If I looked at this quarter just gone, if I look at beer shipments, they're probably off mid-single digit in North America, you know, US and Canada, but the export volumes are up a lot in the last couple of months for the industry as a whole. Like, you know, I was getting north of 20% growth. Have you started to see that export business come back yourselves? Because, you know, I would have thought that would, given the year-on-year comps in the second half last year, would be part that would look pretty good.
Yeah, we haven't seen 20% growth in export, but we have seen improvement. And it depends upon the region, obviously. One is we are seeing Asian marketplace coming back as they had more, you know, opening normalization going on over there, particularly areas like Japan, Korea, and the Southeast Asian countries. We're noticing that picking up in our Australian business, as well as we're seeing an improvement in our Canadian business, which would be the two major areas that we're hitting Asian marketplace. But also we're seeing some of it coming out of the UK, which is both primarily a distilling, but also some brewing that's going on. The other component when the export category, when you look at it in North America, is that Mexico is considered export, import type of business. So for us, we continue to see improvement in demand in Mexico. So that technically is an export because we're supplying that out of Canada and out of the U.S. So we are seeing some nice growth there. A lot of it being imported back in as Mexican brands in both U.S. and Canada, but that's all the numbers flow out. So not the 20% that you're hearing, Jonathan, but we're definitely seeing that growth coming back. That was an area that obviously suffered over the past couple of years. And so we anticipated that comeback. That is coming back. The primary drop in our volumes are primarily domestic beer production, primarily in the U.S., but also what we experienced in Canada. That is where we're seeing the drop in volumes primarily.
All right. Great. Thanks, guys.
Thank you.
Thank you. Your next question comes from Apoorv Sehgal from UBS. Please go ahead.
Thanks, guys, for taking the follow-up questions. First one, maybe a bit of an annoying question. Maybe I just didn't hear it right. With the volumes in the first half, so processed as plus 3% year-on-year, is that just a typo? Because I think before you said, no, it's actually down 3%, or have I just maybe misinterpreted?
Can you repeat that? Apoorv, you broke up a little bit on me.
Sorry, Mark, can you hear me now?
Yes. Mm-hmm.
Sorry. It was just a follow-up question on the volumes in the first half processing business. The Prezzo presentation pack said volumes up 3% for the first half, but then I think on the previous question you said it was actually down 3%. Is it just a typing mistake in the presentation, or have I just, we're talking about different things than maybe I've just misinterpreted?
So we're up. So basically, sorry if that wasn't clear. So we're up 3% versus the prior period last year. That's the 3% increase down from our expectations, but up when we compare to that same period.
Oh, got it. Clear. Understood. Thanks for clarifying that. Okay. Second question, just on the transformation program. Could you quantify the benefits you're expecting for FY23? I think in the past you've said $4.5 million. This year, and then sort of the remaining 21 in FY24. Is that still the case?
Yes, that is still the case. Still confirming that we're on track to the 30 million. And if you saw the notes and the comment on the restructuring costs, that's one example of our benefit. We'll be about break even this year once we've taken those restructuring costs. But those are in flight, and I have confidence we'll deliver that.
But we do have $4.5 million of transformation that will be net realized in FY23.
That's right.
Okay, good to hear. And just final question on gross margin mix, just with the specialty molds versus the base molds, that mix was a little bit diluted in recent times. Where is that sort of sitting now versus where you'd like to get that to?
Yeah, it's sitting consistent to what we were seeing last year. So we're not seeing any improvement at this point. We'll have to see what happens here in the last half. That's usually when we'll see some pickup on the specialty type of malts. So consistent with last year, but we're not seeing an improvement, which would take you back a few years. That means we're still tracking slightly below what that mix looked like pre-COVID.
Thanks, guys.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you. There are no further questions at this time. I'll now hand back to Mr. Palmquist for closing remarks.
Yeah, thanks, Harmony. Again, I appreciate everybody joining the call and appreciate the questions. I just leave it. It's, a year that's just fundamentally different than last year, which was a supply issue. This year's supply is not the issue at all. We've got our contractual terms in place. Our margins are definitely improving. And we'll just keep tracking the volume of demand that's sitting out here. And we certainly are anticipating our seasonal improvement that we get in the last half 2023. So we're looking forward to finishing out FY23 strong and continuance into the following year. So thank you very much, and have a good day.
That does conclude our conference for today. Thank you for participating. You may now disconnect.